Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Daily Tech News Show is brought to you by its audience and not outside organizations. To find out more, hit the dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, May 18th, 2018. Tom Merritt is away in Australia, but I, Sarah Lane, am holding down the fort.
And I am Shannon Morse in Studio Hack 5 here in Oakland, California.
And from the shores of Lake Erie, I'm Len Peralta.
You know, it's so funny. Whenever Tom's out, I'm like, how's the show going to start? I didn't listen to a feline, and I actually have a feline in my studio today, which is rare, actually. Also holding on the fort and keeping everybody sane all week is producer Roger Chang.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. How's it going over there?
Good. A little breezy, a little overcast, but nice.
Good. Well, all right. Without further ado, it's Friday, guys. It's been a long week. Let's start with a few tech things you should know. This should be good news for anybody who is a Fortnite fan. Epic Games announced that the game is coming to Android phones this summer with customized features for mobile and battery saving mode, among others. Fortnite hit iOS in March and it was really popular. In fact, Sensor Tower, which is a mobile analytics firm, estimated that Epic made $15 million in in-app purchases in 3 weeks. The first 3 weeks it was in the App Store.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
It is.
I will say I'm horrible at
Should have been a gamer.
Battle Royale. That game is so hard. So a new report from Strategy Analytics says Apple sold an estimated 600,000 HomePod speakers during the first quarter of 2018, about 6% of the global smart speaker market. Amazon shipped an estimated 4 million Echo smart speakers during the quarter, a 43.6% market share. Google shipped an estimated 2.4 million Google Home speakers for 26.5% market share. Alibaba racked up 700,000 shipments and Xiaomi shipped 200,000.
Kind of a two-company race at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some more Apple news, and let's talk a little bit more about it in our top stories. Apple paid 1.5 billion euros into an escrow account set up by the Irish government to hold 13 billion euros total in disputed taxes. In August of 2016, if you recall, the European Commission ordered Apple to pay the taxes it ruled Apple had received as a legal state aid. Apple and Ireland are both appealing this ruling. Last October, the commission said it was taking the matter to the European Court of Justice over delays in recovering that money. So it looks like Apple's trying to be proactive, even if they're late. Also in Apple news, after rumors all week, local news station WRAL, that's in Raleigh, North Carolina, reports that Apple is set to open its second headquarters there. Apple announced in January it wanted to establish a second HQ beyond where it is in Cupertino and hire an additional 10,000 people. WRAL reports that the only real hurdle Apple faces in Raleigh now is local legislators passing a bill to give the company a package of tax incentives. A lot of tech companies already in the area, IBM, Cisco, Pfizer. It's a whole tech and biotech industry.
Yeah, surprisingly, I have a lot of family over there in the Raleigh area, and the tech scene over there is crazy booming. Like, there's construction all over the place. So I'm not surprised that Apple is deciding to do this.
Well, you know, the tax incentive thing, when I was up in San Francisco, you know, I lived there for a long time, that was the talk of the town, right? There were a lot of tech companies that, you know, threatened to leave. Twitter was one of the biggest examples of that. And, you know, the cities want to retain, obviously, companies and people and talent. And the tax incentive thing is kind of controversial. I don't know the details of Raleigh's specific, you know, proposals, but it is a hub. What do they call it? Like, it's like the tech triangle. Yeah,
it's a tech hub. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense that they would be there because you've already got, a whole industry of, you know, at least the right, tech talent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those markets that's up and coming. So a lot of people could see it as like, oh, I could grow a family here. So they definitely would be incentivized to move there, especially if Apple's there. Moving on, The Verge got hold of a leaked copy of an internal Google video that illustrates how data could direct human behavior. The video was made in 2016 by Nick Foster, the head of design at Google's Research and Development Division X. But the video itself is being called creepy and disconcerting by some, referring to Richard Dawkins' 1976 book, The Selfish Gene. The video premise imagines that people have an ever-evolving online data record, which Foster calls the selfish ledger. And in the future, tracking behavior can determine the direction of how that behavior will have desired results. Google tells The Verge that the video was designed to be provocative and did not relate to any products in development. At least in development yet.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I kept seeing these headlines this morning. Black Mirror. Ooh, what's Google doing? It's like, it sounds like somebody put something together to you know, get an internal team thinking about something. You know, if it wasn't meant for the public, it's like, it doesn't mean that they're building products that, you know, are going to, you know, ruin everybody's lives. However, especially because it was, you know, in Google's sandbox, you know, where they test a lot of stuff in the X department, having at least people in charge who are putting together videos to get the employees of Google thinking about how data collection can influence people's behavior, especially these days, is something that obviously people are going to find troubling.
Yeah, a little bit, especially with AI and our issues with like security and privacy and everything. It could definitely be seen as a little bit too close to home, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I have not read The Selfish Gene, but perhaps I should in this day and age. All right, moving on. PayPal is buying Swedish payments provider iZettle for $2.2 billion. It's an all-cash deal, and it happens to be PayPal's biggest purchase to date. PayPal has bought a lot of companies, but this is the most expensive. The deal is expected to close in Q3 of this year. iZettle's co-founder and CEO Jacob DeGeer will report to PayPal's COO Bill Reddy. And iZettle filed for an IPO just over a week ago. So this timing is probably not coincidental.
It's not surprising to me that PayPal is doing this. I recently spoke to somebody who works in the credit card industry, which I used to. So we totally geeked out over beers for a long time. But I discovered that there's a lot of countries overseas that PayPal is currently not accepted in. I believe PayPal is currently able to be accepted in Sweden. But the issue that they run across is a lot of people can't make further payments to other countries. So it completely makes sense that PayPal is trying to outreach and get the acceptance into other countries so that from there they can market towards, you know, other EU countries or other ones in, you know, the Middle East or wherever it might be.
And it sounds like in this, you know, in this case, you know, it remains to be seen, but iZettle's CEO now report to a COO at PayPal means that it doesn't sound like it's going to be operating independently, right? Because it's sort of merging a new market, unlike Venmo, which PayPal bought in, gosh, it's been a while now, 2013. Yeah. And I mean, for, you know, all intents and purposes, they're totally separate products.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So this definitely is, it's a good merger on PayPal's part, and it gives them the ability to become a worldwide company that can be accepted everywhere, no matter where you live. So this is cool. Good on you, PayPal. Tidal announced it is hiring an independent third-party cybersecurity firm to investigate a possible data breach, saying, "We feel it is important to make sure that our artists, employees, and subscribers know that we are not taking the security and integrity of our data lightly, and we will not back down from our commitment to them." The action comes after a Norwegian financial newspaper published a story alleging Tidal stats were manipulated and that the company was behind on payments to three major record companies after receiving a hard drive filled with Tidal play data. Tidal, of course, denied the reports.
Shannon, I am not a Tidal user. I actually signed up for, I used it for its free trial period and then it ran out and I just switched back to Apple Music. But, you know, no problem with Tidal necessarily. But for Tidal, which is backed by, you know, it's Jay-Z's company and obviously it has quite a bit of investment, to not be able to pay royalty fees, which is the whole business strategy. You know, Tidal says that this isn't true, but where are these stories coming from?
Right. It's very surprising to hear this come from a newspaper, unless they have some kind of valid proof, because if they didn't, wouldn't it be considered slander?
So the whole gist of it is that this, and I left out the name because everyone would have a hard time pronouncing the paper that
the
we did
day,
last time.
It was really bad, yeah. And
they received the hard drive data, and they had it verified through a secondary or third party on the data. Now, what's so interesting is that Tidal has vehemently denied, like saying that the information was all slander, and it was there to just basically throw shade on the company. It's doing fine, but a lot of critics are arguing, well, if it's all fake, then why are you launching an investigation into a data breach if nothing happened, right? Why are you looking into it if you do indeed believe that there's not, you know, those that information that's been quote unquote leaked is all fake, kind of. And so it's very interesting, and there's a lot more that's going to happen out of this whole thing, because really, what they were, you know, what they're alleging to have had happened is that they were inflating certain artists' play stats in favor of other ones, and so, well, not in favor, at the expense of other artists. So basically, people were getting not paid for the actual VR listens that they were actually getting, and so that would then call into question whether or not Tidal is, you know, playing on a fair and level table with all the people that they've signed on contract.
I mean, with all the music streaming service news that we cover, and Roger and I were talking about this morning before the show, it's like, when was the last time we talked about Tidal 2 days in a row? Tidal, yeah. Tidal tends to get buried, and it's not because, you know, again, it's, I'm sure they're, you know, it's a great product in its own way, but it's so far down market share, yeah, that, you know, you see stories like this and it's like, I think that lends itself to believing that maybe something really bad is going on behind the scenes, because they just don't seem to be competing.
And, you know, again, these are all allegations. So it remains to be seen, but it is a very interesting story.
Could we say that Tidal has not been making waves?
We could. I bet someone will choose that for the show title later on. All right, so Shannon, it's so great that you're here today, because you are a security person and there's so much security news, even in, you know, just even today on a Friday. So I'm going to try to set this up for you based on Location Smart's most recent news, and then we can kind of backtrack and fill in the blanks. So Location Smart, a data aggregator that collects real-time location data on millions of cell phone customers via cell carriers, this is across North America, had a bug in its website that allowed anybody to see where a person is located without obtaining that person's consent. Now, the site had like a trial period page that lets you test the accuracy of its data before you, you know, sign up and give it money. The page required explicit consent. They have to do this from the user before location data can be used. Sent you a text message, you know, you authenticate the whole thing. However, Robert Zhao, he's a PhD student at the Human Computer Interaction Institute at Carnegie Mellon, tells ZDNet that skipping the consent step still revealed location data because one of the APIs used on that page was not validating. And he kind of called it like a really elementary bug that they should have known a lot better about.
Yeah, it sounds like, and from what I was able to collect from his video, although he did not release the actual script that he created, was he wrote a very simple Python code that basically bypassed what was happening on their website to secure that, yes, I have given my consent from my phone via that text message or downloading an app or whatever it might be, so that you can track my data. And I've allowed you to do this. And the reason why Location Smart ended up on everybody's radar is because of this earlier story about Sakura. And I believe we're going to talk about that a little bit more in our longer story, but it's amazing that you have this company who's been working in the background for so long and nobody really knew about them until now. And it's just this teeny tiny Python script that could unlock all sorts of information. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but given, you know, that we do videos online, that scares me a lot because I've had like a real life stalker show up, you know, at my workplace. So it's scary to think that anybody could go to this website, bypass that consent authentication and be able to track wherever I might be within very, very good GPS coordinates within a few feet. Very scary.
Yeah, you mentioned Sakura, so we might as well just get into how Location Smart played a role in, you know, a carrier like AT&T talking to Securus. They're not supposed to be able to sell that data, certainly not to the government, but if there's a third-party company, it gets a little bit murky, right? We covered Location Smart this week basically as the middleman on whether U.S. carriers were sharing user location data with data aggregators. And were there legal loopholes that would allow them to do so? So how does Securus and Location Smart talk to each other?
So it's not completely public as far as like what the back end agreement is here, but basically what I have understood from the gist of my reading is that the carriers online have agreed with Sakura as far as like giving Sakura information, and then Sakura works with Location Smart as a third party to unlock all of the data about GPS coordinates. But what's going on between with Sakura and the government is that they are using it for police calls, like with inmates and stuff like that. So
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now, on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
it's not the main reason that they're using the company. It's like an offshoot.
But it's such a bit like, okay, it's an offshoot, but it's a huge privacy issue for everyone who has a cell phone.
It's a huge concern. And a lot of privacy advocates were really irritated with this this policy that came out of the federal government because it did have this loophole. It was only for the carriers, you know, AT&T, Verizon, and everybody like that. You can't share that consumer data. But when they're working with a third-party provider, that third party is able to do whatever they want with that data because they're a private company. So private companies aren't relegated or aren't worked with the federal government the way that carriers are.
So let me jump in here. Sorry. I'm curious. So is this more of a legislation issue? Like if we had laws in place that would prevent this, would this not be an issue? Or is there still some gray area because of the way the technology works that they could still do it even if it were, you know, in a, you know, hush hush kind of way?
Well, I think the problem is a lot of times with, you know, U.S. regulations, they work really well, but they only work whenever they're catching somebody doing something wrong. So these companies could still collect all sorts of information with the technology that they have at hand. It's not until if we had some kind of regulation to for these private companies that they would actually get caught and then they would have to like pay a fine or something like that. And that's not to say that they would never get closed down or something if they did have to pay a fine. But there's nothing currently in place as far as technology goes to block them from being able to do this. So we as consumers can't block them from tracking our phones if they know, you know, our phone number, which is really unfortunate from that privacy standpoint. So I don't know if regulation would actually fix the issue. I think it's more of a technological issue.
Well, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act prevents carriers from sharing user location directly to the government, U.S. government. It sounds like there aren't any restrictions in place on other companies.
Right.
However, there could be. The FCC has been asked to investigate the matter. It sounds sort of like, hey, we just had to add another line.
Yeah.
Really realize what was going on and, you know, now we can fix it. But that's the way you figure things out sometimes.
Now, another thing that actually happened this week, which was kind of like, you know, like scratching the head of security, was the whole PGBS mime issue. Now, of course, there was that story that the EFF pushed out there saying, like, everyone using PGP plugins, stop right now. Don't use it till we figure out what's going on. You know, use an alternate communication method. But from what I understand, it's not really an inherent PGP flaw, but rather a third party plugin flaw. Or if you could explain, or
yeah. Yeah, totally. Sorry, I hit my mic, but I'll kind of go into it and break it down by segments. So in order to understand what the heck is going on with all these other news articles, you kind of got to understand what PGP and S-MIME is. And they kind of work the same, not technically on the background, but for the most part, they work with the same kind of idea. You have a public key and a private key, and you allow anybody to have your public key, and then you are the only person that has your private key. And if somebody wants to send you an encrypted message, all they have to do is stick your public key with their private key, mix it up a little bit, and then send it on your way. And then when you receive that message, you can unlock it with your private key. And hopefully you're the only one that has your private key. So you're the only one that can see the plain text of that message. So if anybody else receives that message, whether it's PGP or S-MIME, they shouldn't be able to see anything. It's just a bunch of garbledy gunk that doesn't make any kind of sense. The unfortunate thing with eFail is it uses this technique to gain access to those PGP encrypted messages. So first it needs to get access somehow, whether that's like watching your network and stealing your emails, or it could be as simple as knowing your email address and password so they can log in and they can read your emails, or it could be somehow gaining access to the email server, like whether it's Gmail servers or Yahoo servers or whoever it might be. So they need to have access to those emails first off to make it work. Once they get access, though, that's when they can actually use this eFail technique to to kind of make those messages a little bit different than what they originally were, they end up adding a little bit of code into the encrypted message. So you have an encrypted message that looks like gobbledygook. Up at the top, they stick a little line of HTML code. And this HTML code usually links to a picture. And HTML, when written out, it looks like a little bracket, IMG, SRC, and then an image link. Sounds pretty easy as far as concerned. But when they create this link, they stick half of it at the top and then half of it at the bottom of the encrypted message. Then they send it on their way. And when you open it up with your third-party email provider, whether it's Gmail or Windows Outlook, I don't use Outlook, or if it's, I believe it's called Apple Mail for Apple users. When you open it, these automatically look at that HTML and they say, oh, this must be a picture in your email. Let me go ahead and figure out this HTML code for you and turn it into an image. And, oh, it also looks like a link. So I'm going to go ahead and send this to the link server. Well, that link server is the attacker. So when it looks at this picture, it's actually the plain text of your email. And that gets turned into the link for the picture that gets sent to the attacker's server. So when the attacker opens up or gets a notification about this plain text message that should have been encrypted the whole time, what they're going to see is, you know, HTTP, the attacker server / instead of an image, it's your plain text a message. It's your private details that you sent to somebody.
And I think what makes it so ingenious and dangerous is that they can't actually see the email until you decrypt it. And
right.
And essentially what this is that they're literally peeking over your shoulder when you decrypt this encrypted mail. So you are looking at your mail, but they're able to look at it too at the same time. And I think that's, I mean, it does present a huge security risk, but this isn't an issue with PGP. This is an issue with the Outlook or your email client.
The HTML thing has kind of been known for decades. Like GNUPG, I believe they're called. They came out with some information a long time ago, and they were like, "Hey, this is an issue. You need to make sure that if you use a third party email service or if you run one, you need to either not accept HTML, not roll out HTML or parse it out and give people these image links, or you need to make sure that you're not linking out to external links whenever people automatically decrypt these emails. So you can totally bypass this flaw if you're decrypting your PGP messages, if you're already using it, by either using a decryptor in the command line, or you can use one of the third-party services that don't even have the flaw in their email service. So it only affects a few of the many different email providers that are available on the web right now. I know Gmail is affected for S/MIME, I believe it is. One of the ones that is not affected at all is ProtonMail, and they're one of the best like security providers I know of that does email services. So if I don't like the fact that a lot of companies, including the EFF, are saying, stop using PGP, because I feel like that's it's going to scare a lot of people away from that security. And one of the great quotes I saw from the GNUPG website was, that's like telling people all the locks are flawed. Take all the locks out of your houses. You know, take that lock off your front door because there's no point in having it there.
It's not perfect, so just have nothing.
Yeah, it's not perfect, so might as well not have any security. We know PGP isn't perfect, but it's better than having no security because it's still a targeted attack. So I recommend that people still use PGP, just don't unlock it with a third-party service that is vulnerable.
Good explanation, Shannon. Thank you. Wow.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, of course. No, that's why we love you. No, that's great. And I'm sure there will be more updates to the story, and we will obviously cover them here on DTNS. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You help us choose our stories and learn a little bit more about what you're interested in. Submit stories and vote on them, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We also have a Facebook group. If Facebook's your bag, great. Hang out there. Facebook.com/groups/DailyTechNewsShow. We got an email from Russell Boyer, who is a instructor of business admin at Kansas State University. And he had some thoughts on our discussion with Scott the other day about exam cheating. That was on Wednesday. He says, educators are always going to be in an arms race with students because students are going to cheat. Wearables are problematic because a lot of faculty just don't realize the capabilities of these devices. That's the problem. I started asking my students to remove smartwatches during exams about 3 years ago, partly to prevent distractions, but also to block students from trying to crib from notes on their watch or using a watch with a camera to take notes or take pictures of the exam. Very spy of them. Cheating on assignments outside of class has also become very problematic, though. Many faculty now employ some variety of online tool to help monitor their students' work. Many of my students' homework is in the form of Excel, and I use a system that adds digital fingerprints to homework assignments that alerts me when a student submits an assignment with any identifier other than their own. And then he wraps up by saying, DTNS is the first podcast I recommend to my students as a way to keep up with what is happening in the world of tech. So thank you very much, Russell. Shannon, I know you don't have children and, you know, in school and ready to cheat yet, but the idea that there's this whole new, you know, can't have a phone in class, but now can't have a smartwatch.
Yeah.
And then, you know, perhaps in the, you know, in the future, glasses as well. It's a real problem.
Well, I went to college when cell phones were just starting to become a thing. And it was an absolute problem for a lot of teachers because not only would the phones ring in the middle of class, but people were figuring out that you can take what used to be black and white photos on your little flip phones, but you could read the notes while you were in class, just like stick them right underneath your textbook or something, and you would have access to whatever you needed. So it's a total arms race. It's like a tennis match between the students and the teachers. But you know, I always advise don't cheat, because you know, I think you could get thrown out of colleges if you cheat these days. So
right. Just like, even if you get away with it, you still know you did it.
Yeah.
Someone who does not cheat, though, is Len Peralta, who joins us every Friday and has been drawing a customized illustration of what we talked about on the show. Len, what do you got?
Yeah, you know, I'm always impressed, like you, Sarah, by the knowledge that Shannon brings to the show. And this is a little, you know, something I did for her because I felt that she's just such an amazing person.
Oh my gosh, that's so great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
I really, this might be my favorite thing I've ever drawn for the show.
It's so accurate.
Really cool. It's really cool. For those of you who aren't watching, it is the Obama Hope poster, of course, that meme, but it says hack, and it's a picture of Shannon.
Oh my gosh.
When you didn't have your pink hair anymore, but that's sort of a reminder.
That's okay. I'll get some overtone and we'll make it happen again.
So I'll have beautiful. That. Shepherd Fairey was the original artist, right?
Yes.
I'm getting that right. Yeah, I love it. Wow, pretty Shannon, cool. Frame gorgeous. It.
Thank
yes.
you, Len.
And this is you're very welcome, Shannon. Your knowledge goes, it's just crazy. It's crazy good. You can actually go to LenPeraltaStore.com, and if you want this poster, you can do a digital download, or you can get it, you can just buy it, and I'll sign it and send it to you. So there you go.
Well, thank you, Len, for being here today and every week. Your artwork is unparalleled, and couldn't do it without you. Okay. Also, thanks to Shannon Morse. Shannon, besides you know, researching PGP and Location Smart, what have you been doing lately?
Oh man, we've been doing a lot of stuff over on TechThing, TekThing.com. Recently, Patrick Norton reviewed this really cool universal remote that you can speak to, and it's supposed to be able to get you exactly to the thing that you want to watch, whether it's on your Roku or your Apple TV or wherever you might have this information. So it's really easy to use, and it was very, very fun to check out. And I've also been working really hard on ThreatWire over at ThreatWire.com. So if you want to learn all the ins and outs about the whole PGP S/MIME thing that was going on and those email vulnerabilities, definitely check it out. I also have a Patreon account if you want to support me there.
We absolutely do. What is it?
Patreon.com/ThreatWire. It's real easy.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Shannon and Len. Speaking of Patreon, we have one too. Patreon.com/DTNS. We also have a great store with some new merchandise. If you haven't been there lately, check it out. DailyTechNewsShow.com/store. Our email address is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com. We love your feedback. Keep it coming. We're also live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can find out more at DailyTechNewsShow.com/live. Monday is a special day. Tom is taking over. Special edition of DTNS from Down Under. It's an Australian roundtable with Peter Wells and Raj Dutt. Roger and I and the whole gang will take back over on Tuesday. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.